Devices Radio Network.
This show is brought to you by Napsgear.org. Head to www.napsgear.org and see why the name has been trusted for years. Join the community today.
Welcome to PED After Hours, a one-hour interview program, raw, uncut, unfiltered, with your host, Taylor Normandy.
Brains getting into the nitty gritty of all of this. Thanks to Napsgear for putting this on. You'll be hearing from them a little bit later. And without any delay here, I'd like to welcome our first guest. He was actually our first guest, I believe, on Inside Bodybuilding too. So it's kind of a full circle here. Justin Harris. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Since the last time we talked to you, you were sort of flirting with a comeback. Things are now full swing. Just update us to what your plan is and when you made the plan and where you're at in your prep.
Right now, I'm a little over 5 weeks out of the Masters Nationals. I had thought about doing it last year, started the prep a little bit, realized I wasn't where I wanted to be, then thought about maybe trying the Nationals, did the same thing, just wasn't the right time. And then finally, this winter, I just thought, you know, geez, I've been back training over a year now. It's either do it or not do it. So yeah. I just decided to do it and now here I am.
Was there a specific point where you sort of looked at yourself and you felt like you hit back to where you were, or have you not hit that yet, or have you surpassed it? Was there like a sort of a clear moment?
You know, I was doing I was really worried at first about my legs. When I first started back training, I trained, but it's after like 6 years away, it was really hard to kind of mentally remember just what kind of intensity you needed on leg day. You know, I guess it's a better way to describe it, but I think everyone, when they first start training, their upper body takes off and their legs lag behind because you don't realize even an easy leg workout is a hard workout. So I think you don't quite.
Yeah. You don't understand a hard leg workout is a whole different level. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a while to realize that. And then I was doing legs every other day, trying to bring them up, and I noticed they were coming up, and I thought, you know, I think I'm ready. And that was this winter, and that was probably the timing.
Now, what the hell were you doing for legs every other day? Were the workouts different, or are you just going there and murdering yourself every time?
Murdering myself. I just want, you know, what it was really is I thought about doing the Masters Nationals last year, thought about doing the Nationals, and didn't do either of them in my training. It just kind of got kind of lame, and I just thought, you know, I was just kind of pissed at myself, and I thought, I haven't done anything crazy in a long time, and I feel like I used to take a lot of pride in my training intensity and working my butt off, and I just wasn't doing that. And so I kind of wanted to just do something stupid, and I saw Rod O'Baines on Facebook posted a picture of his legs and said he had been doing legs every other day, and I thought, you know what, I'll try that. And then at first I thought, you know, I would work out a program where I could do legs every other day, but then I thought, I just want to do something really dumb. Really, just to prove to myself I still got some, you know, some kind of intensity ability.
And some screws loose, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I did a full 30 to 40 sets every 48 calendar or every 48 hours. So every other week, it was actually 4 days a week. I would train legs, you know, 4 days, then 3 days, then 4 days. And I did that for 6 weeks.
Was there any point where you wanted to quit, or you just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was... The first week or two was really bad because you're just completely constantly sore.
Yeah.
And then the soreness kind of starts to go away around week three. It goes away a little bit. Your body just kind of gets used to it. But then what I found was happening is my upper body was just shriveling up.
Yeah.
I think partly because you're only, you know, on the days I train legs 4 days that week, even if I do, you know, only 2 days for my entire upper body, that's 6 days of training that week. So It's tough for me with four kids and them playing sports and things like that to get in even 5 days a week. So part of it was my upper body not getting trained as much. And part of it was when you're doing, you know, 2 hours of legs every 48 hours, it's tough to keep it's tough to eat enough food basically to keep size on. So my upper body was kind of shriveling up. That was getting frustrating. Then I got to about the 4 week point and I was just wrecked. I mean, it started to get to where it was really tough to get through leg workouts. And I was just planning the workouts, you know, in my head ahead of time with a set number of sets and kind of a general weight guideline. And I was just completely on autopilot. And I was just, you know, just getting through the motions. And so I think if I ever did it again, I'd probably cut it off at 4 weeks because those last 2 weeks were really rough. But what ended up happening was my legs didn't, they pretty much stayed the same size during the 6 weeks. My upper body shriveled up. But then after the program was over and I went back to a normal split routine of, you know, 5 days a week or whatever.
Yeah, once a week legs.
Yeah. My upper body were within a week or two went right back to where it was and my legs just exploded in size. And so I think it ended up working out because in my whole career I always felt like my legs lagged behind. I mean, I was very strong on squats I felt like I was doing everything right, but my legs were never a standout body part. And I just thought that they just weren't genetically a good part. Cause all my training partners, like Steve Kuklo and a partner before him who probably had even better legs than Steve Kuklo named Mike Hickey, all my training partners had freaky legs. So I felt like my workouts actually worked for somebody, but this is the first time my legs finally took off and now I think they're my best body part.
Wow. Is that basically what you attribute to sort of like an overreaching then pulling back kind of thing? Like it almost was programmed into the old DC training?
Yeah, I think that was, if I ever wanted to bring up another body part, that's what I would do. Something just
completely fuck it up for a month or so and then chill out a little bit.
Yeah, and then let it come back. And I think you just kind of generate just, I always had trouble with my hamstrings. My quads were always decent. It was really my calves and hamstrings. And I think you just generate so much better neural connection. So I think you just so many sets and reps, you just, in such a short period of time, your body just kind of generates a better mind muscle connection. And so now every workout I have now, my hamstrings get sore. I think they're still improving. So I think I would do that for other body parts for sure.
Awesome. Other than that, is there any differences that you've noticed into how your body's responding to this prep in general? Thing either diet, training, drugs before the time off?
Yeah, it's very, very different actually. My legs always would shrink really quick when I diet. What would happen is like my legs, glutes and abs would kind of come in quick, but my back and especially for whatever reason my arms would always seem to hold a lot of fat and stay very large but really not separated. And this time it's been weird. I've had striated glutes since 8 or 9 weeks out and my arms are very separated. I'm even getting kind of cross striations on my, you know, like my brachioradialis and stuff.
Yeah.
But my abs are not coming in this prep. And I don't know, it's killing me because I feel like I'm going to step on stage with cross striated quads and striated glutes and then and a gut.
And a belly. Yeah. Is there anything you're doing differently sort of in your protocol that could attribute some sort of water retention specifically or localized?
If anything, this is the first prep I've ever really trained abs. Oh. That's another thing I kind of wanted to focus on is I always felt like my conditioning didn't really show through well enough because I just could never be bothered to train the abs. I hated doing it. And even though I knew it would make me a better bodybuilder on stage, I always thought, you know, I do this for me and I do it because I enjoy it and I hate doing abs. So it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But this time I decided that I have to, this is the first show I've ever really done where my primary goal is bringing a physique that I think could potentially win the show. In the past, I had always, you know, you always want to win a show, but I had thought I wanted to look the way I wanted to look.
Yeah.
And this time I really want to place well. And so I'm training my abs, which I thought would have brought my abs in better, but maybe that's causing extra water retention.
Maybe you had it right all along.
Yeah.
If you do, is this the beginning of a sort of a string of competing, or is this like a once of why do you want to place well now that you didn't really care before?
Personal frustration. I think I came up really quick. I won the Mr. Michigan in 2004, the Junior USAs in 2006, and then I did the USAs in 2007. So I only competed for about 3 years, and I moved all the way up to, you know, potentially challenging for a pro card. And for multiple reasons, I left the sport. But now everyone I knew all my old friends, all my old training partners, all my old business partners. They're all pro bodybuilders now. And these were all people that, you know, at the time I was beating in competition.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of just, yeah, kind of a, you know, like, oh, man, why? I just think to myself, what an asshole, you know, why did I give up on that after putting so much effort into it? And so this time I'd like to do well. And I actually feel like I don't know what'll happen. You know, I could do the Masters Nationals, get my ass to realize that I was just delusional and maybe it'd be my last show. But if I do well, I'd like to keep going. And I think after the 6 years away from the sport, I don't feel like a Masters competitor. I feel fresh.
For sure.
I think I have a good 10 years of me left.
Awesome. Well, that's cool to hear. It's very different than the last time we spoke to you. You were sort of just toying with it. So,
partly I'm 5 weeks out, and you know, no matter how logical and robotic you want to be about a contest prep, once you get into it and you're starving all the time and preparing your meals, you get it.
It better be for a reason. Yeah.
So it's kind of like a psychological thing where the harder the initiation is to something, the stronger your feeling is. I could do the show, go back to eating some good food and being fat and happy and think, man, I'm never doing that again. But right now I feel like I've got a lot of things I want to accomplish.
Awesome. Are you doing anything different, like psycho-wise, chemically, that like, you know, 6 years off is a long time. So many people on the internet, everything's always newest, latest, greatest, this, that. Have you succumbed to any of that and tried anything new? Or are you basically going back to your basics?
Yeah, well, kind of. Unfortunately, I'm doing this without growth hormone right now.
Oh.
What? Not on purpose. I ordered
the whole time or what? The whole
prep? No, I had some, and then I wasn't quite stocked up as I should have been. And I ordered from gray tops from Homer Con or whatever.
Yeah,
in like,
yeah.
In like April, and they still haven't come. And so,
fuck.
Oh yeah. I mean,
how long has it been off? I'm curious if you noticed.
Two weeks.
When did you notice or anything?
My weight's been dropping. Just kind of, you know, it's just a little, this fullness on low days.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters much. I mean, I think there's good and bad. I think you have the look that the guys have now when using higher dose GH, that really full round freaky look is cool. But if you look at the guys from the 90s, they had a cool look too without it, you know, a much drier, harder,
for sure,
separated look. So, I think at the end of the day, it's not going to affect me much. I think you have to diet harder without it. I'm noticing that the fat loss is requiring extra effort these last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But
what have you done to balance that out? Just up to cardio or just hack calories?
Well, I dropped calories a little bit and increased the cardio a little bit.
Nice. Everyone's always curious about the little boring details. When do you do your cardio? You fasted post-workout? What's up?
I do fasted. I don't take branching amino acids or anything. I get up first thing in the morning, completely empty stomach. I do 20 minutes of high intensity interval cardio on the spin cycle at work. And the frustrating thing is I'm really, really, really pushed for time.
Yeah.
I actually have kind of toyed with the idea for my website, Muscle Mentor, of writing a article, you know, titled how bad of a dad am I willing to be? Because I feel like that's what everything is, you know, I mean, every workout I do, I never really get to complete a workout and complete my cardio. I'm always staring at the clock. And my kids have softball games Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so I try to go to the gym right after work before softball. But it gets, you know, if I do the cardio I'm supposed to do, then I'm going to miss their first at bat. If I don't do the cardio, then I might catch their first at bat. And so it's a constant thing with that. And then and then after training late and with their games, I don't get home till 9 o'clock or something. And I still got to prepare my food for the day. And so I'm usually up to about 10:30. Well, I start work at 7.
Yeah.
So to even do 20 minutes of cardio to get to work on time, I got to be back up at 5:30. So I'm already, you know, if I watch zero TV, rest 0 minutes, don't shave, barely brush my teeth, I'm only at about 6 hours of sleep. So what I've done for cardio is I've been doing all high intensity interval training. And so right now I'm doing 20 minutes completely fasted first thing in the morning, high intensity interval training, and then I do 20 minutes post workout.
You mentioned your earlier preps that your legs would shrivel. Were you doing high intensity back then, or is that steady state?
No, actually, I have some kind of strong feelings personally recently about that.
Okay.
I don't do more steady state, and I would do the treadmill. And this time I've done all, I would prefer to do all step mill, but my gym doesn't have a step mill, and I've begged them repeatedly to get one. I've even offered to help pay for it, but they're not getting one. And so I'm doing the spin cycle. It's the closest I feel like I can get to, and what the reason is, what I think is my views on overtraining and what increases size and what burns muscle has really completely changed since I did the legs every other day program.
Yeah.
And the way I feel right now, what I used to have thought was that, you know, the step mill on high intensity or doing the spin cycle with heavy resistance where your legs just fill with blood and lactate and burn would burn muscle, where you're doing the treadmill and your legs don't get that pump, it would preserve muscle. But now I feel like it's the opposite. I feel like my legs have held size much better doing the type of training that actually brings a ton of blood into my quads and glutes while I do cardio. And I feel like the treadmill, when you're doing that, you really, the only stress you have on your legs doing the treadmill is kind of when your feet land, you know, and you get that hard, quick, eccentric motion, negative portion where your knee goes from slightly bent to straight, and it's almost like thousands of short, negative, eccentric movements.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
ends up breaking down the muscle more, where counterintuitively, the movement that burns your, you know, brings blood and lactate to your muscles, like the spin cycle and the step mill, actually help preserve muscle, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's generally becoming the consensus. And I guess that makes perfect sense that the legs are probably very hard to overtrain, especially if you're actually doing something that causes them to grow as opposed to something that teaches them to just sort of, you know, plod along, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Other than the lack of growth hormone, thanks to shitty shipping, is there anything else you've done sort of cycle-wise differently?
Yeah, a couple things. I'm using Novadex as my antiestrogen.
Only?
Yeah. I'll probably add in Arimidex shortly here, probably this next week or so. But and that really came from talking with John Meadows. And
yeah, we had him on our show, and he mentioned that, and it was quite it perplexed many people.
I would have thought the exact opposite, but now that I think about it, I almost feel like the aromatase inhibitors are too strong. I feel like there could potentially be some. Maybe aromatization isn't so bad. So you get the aromatization and estrogen increases, but what the Novadex does is it prevents that estrogen from binding to the receptor, you know, where the aromatase inhibitors prevent the aromatase completely. So now I'm thinking there might be some benefit to estrogen floating through the bloodstream. We just don't want it to be active. We don't want it to be able to exert any effects on the body.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then if you also think about it, you look at the guys now, the last 10, 15 years, they've all used letrozole, aromacin, Arimidex, things like that. But the guys from the 90s, who's the kind of conditioning and hardness I still don't think has been matched, you know, like Dorian Yates and things like that, all those guys had was Novadex. So I completely changed my views on that. And it's so much healthier. It's not as hard on the cholesterol, you know, it helps keep your HDL higher. And I feel like you just feel much less. It doesn't cut your sex drive like the aromatase inhibitors do. I don't feel exhausted like I would on the AIs. So that's what I've been recommending to all my clients as well.
Awesome. And do you think there's a sort of limit of how much testosterone you can use before you do need an AI, or do you think it's applicable to pretty much any situation?
I think pretty much any situation. And I think if you're using it for contest, I think if you're using it in the off season, you're not worried so much about a little bit of estrogen.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If you're using it pre-contest, and if you're using so much testosterone that even with maybe 40 milligrams a day of Novadex, you're still getting, you know, estrogen levels increased, you're probably using too much test for a pre-contest diet.
That makes sense.
I mean, really, you should be using. I don't think there's anything wrong with keeping testosterone throughout a contest diet, but really, you should be using other agents as well.
What kind of ratios do you prefer and do you utilize?
That's another thing that I'm kind of changing. After working with so many clients around the world, you really see patterns.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of the UK guys test way early. And a lot of the Arab guys that get freaky grainy and freaky hard.
They barely use it at all for like
very little injection. Yeah, the whole prep, they'll go without it. And not only that, they'll go out without a lot of injectables, period, and just use tons of orals. Which I don't think is good or healthy at all, but you can't argue with how grainy the guys in, you know, the Arab countries get. And same thing with the UK, that they really seem to, they don't like test or trend, in my experience.
Huh.
Yeah, a lot of the guys seem to think trend causes water retention, not almost as bad as test. So it's just really different from the American approach. But I think, you know, a lot of the guys with the really good conditioning, you know, and you can see the way the looks are. The Arab guys have a certain look. The British guys kind of have a certain look, and then the American guys have a certain look. And it does seem to coincide with the type of cycle patterns that the different areas use. The American guys are always big and full, and not quite as peeled. The Arab guys are smaller but incredibly separated. And even little things like even shoulder separation, because they're not doing the injections in the shoulders and stuff.
Yeah, that's also another thing. One thing I always found perplexing is back in, like, you keep sort of referencing the 90s. In the 90s, the glutes weren't as striated, but their backs were just so much drier. Then you look today, people just notice the glutes right away. Oh, he's got striated glutes, but then he's got his back is smooth. Is it, what the hell? Like, what's that?
I don't know, and I always wonder about that, because I don't really, you try to think logically and step by step, what I do, and I can't really find a reason for that. Other than there's way more emphasis on striated glutes, and so maybe the fact that people are spending so much more effort, a lot of times, a lot of guys will use a glute and hamstring day specifically in the pre-contest phase, or they'll use things like the step mill, and you can't really spot reduce, but studies have shown, fat loss is generally systemic, but blood flow is required for fat loss.
For sure.
And so if you're doing something like the step mill and you're getting more blood flow in your glutes than you would if you're doing the treadmill, and you're doing that for 4 months, once or twice a day, every day for 4 months, while you're burning fat, you have a higher ratio of blood flow to your glutes than you do in a different way. There is going to be slightly higher fat loss from that area. And there are studies that show that. It's not spot reduction. I mean, we're talking, a tiny, tiny increase in percentage, but over hundreds of cardio sessions, that increase is going to make a difference.
This show is brought to you by napsgear.org. Head to www.napsgear.org and see why the name has been trusted for years. Join the community today. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look at like a 90s Kevin Lavrone, the glutes weren't up to today's standards, but his back was just like etched out and veiny.
Oh, everyone's back was so feathered. And I really don't have a reason for that other than maybe the availability of things like Primavolin and stuff like that back then might have been higher. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows, huh? We sort of covered your pre-contest, sort of what you're doing. Last time I spoke to you, you were a test EQ off-season kind of guy. Is that sort of the same protocol for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's more to life than bodybuilding. And I think if you can't grow and make progress in the off-season with something basic that doesn't cause health problems, this isn't the sport for you. I mean, unfortunately, that's the way it is. I know everyone's goal is to, turn pro and stuff, but the guys that do well as a pro are turning pro on what most guys are doing before they even do their first contest. And that's really the truth. It doesn't mean that they're not going all out once they become a pro, but if you need to run, growth hormone and insulin and IGF-1 and peptides and five different compounds in a cycle in the off season, when you're, when you're not even a pro yet, you really need to think, how far am I going to go in this sport? And I think, and partly if you look at the way my physique goes, I mean, I start a contest prep around 270, and I'm still 270, 6 or 7 weeks out of the show. And so that comes from, because I don't really throw the kitchen sink per se at it until I start a contest prep.
Yeah. Are you a fan of DECA at all, or do you prefer EQ in general?
I prefer EQ. I'm really prolactin sensitive.
Oh, okay.
So that's my only reason for it.
Gotcha. We discussed your estrogen control. Now you have all your clients not doing the Novadex pretty much?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who's responded poorly to it, or has it pretty much all been positive?
No, I mean, it's really all been positive. It's not something I've done for years where I've had, hundreds and hundreds of clients, for experimental data. But in the time I've done it, everyone's noticed, they haven't lost their sex drive. They haven't kind of felt as tired and crappy as they have. And we've had zero difficulty getting into contest shape. You know, the thing is, I still add an aromatase inhibitor at the end, maybe the last 4, maybe 6 weeks. But up until that point, people seem to enjoy the contest prep seems to be much less draining, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. You just don't feel as shitty.
That's always a bonus. Sort of switching topics here. let's cover some blood pressure issues, because I know that's something you, at least last time, had a lot to say that a lot of people had questions about. First of all, what are the main things that are causing high blood pressure with bodybuilders in the first place? Is it the drug use and not controlling things like water retention? Like, what are the main culprits?
Yeah, you're taking things that increase water retention, increase red blood cell count, increase blood volume, and so you have thicker blood, more blood, and more water in the body. That's you only have so many tubes to pump fluid through. You know, you take your garden hose, you have the same garden hose whether you pump 100,000 gallons through it or 5,000 gallons, and the same whether you pump really thick sludge through it or clean water through it. And so what happens is guys are taking all these things that raise their blood pressure, and then they just leave it untreated. And the body's response to that is, you can picture the cardiovascular system, the kidneys are like a coffee filter. Well, if you're spraying a fire hose at a coffee filter, it's going to start tearing that thing apart and make it less good, less effective at filtering, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to rip holes in the filter. And so that causes the kidney problems that people have. Well, even worse, then they have the kidney problems, and so they don't filter the blood as well. And so the blood gets even thicker and more filled with toxins. And so then the heart has to pump that. And so the heart has to pump a thicker, higher pressure blood, and it works the muscle harder. And so the heart's like any other muscle. It's going to grow when it works harder. The problem is the heart doesn't grow outside. It grows inside the chamber. So when the heart muscle grows, the actual filling chamber gets smaller. And so, but then you have more blood and thicker blood to pump. So the body can't have a smaller chamber. So what ends up happening then is it dilates. And as it dilates, its contractile ability gets weaker. And so it gets even weaker at pumping blood through the body, which makes the kidneys have to work harder, but they're already damaged. And so they're already not filtering as well. And it just snowballs, and you get the congestive heart failures that Nasser El-Sambadi died from, and you get the kidney failures that guys like Don Long and Tom Prince had. And it's all so dumb, because if you just keep your blood pressure under control, there's really almost zero risk to injectables, at least. You know, I mean, if with orals, you still have liver issues, but that's why I believe that you should avoid those all year except for pre-contest.
Yeah.
And so it's really just dumb. And then even worse, you know, like I said, lisinopril, I found a study where lisinopril raised IGF-1. It increases blood flow to the microvasculature. And so we talked about spot reduction, like your glutes and things.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, if you, lisinopril gives you better blood flow to that area, so you can potentially even, you know, be better at getting striated glutes while also keeping yourself healthy. So it's not even like, I just talked to bodybuilders, and for whatever reason, I think they hear high pressure, they think strong or something, and they think if they lower their blood pressure, somehow they're going to get worse results. But the actual fact is that they're going to get better results.
What do you, I know from even firsthand experience, a lot of time doctors just want to throw you on hydrochlorothiazide and stuff like that. What does that happen when a bodybuilder introduces that on a daily basis?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. I mean, the doctor doesn't care about your bodybuilding progress, and so they'll put you on a beta blocker and hydrochlorothiazide. And the hydrochlorothiazide isn't a problem, I don't think. I mean, your body adjusts to it really quickly. It's not going to affect things. It's not going to affect, like, your final week contest prep. That's not so bad, but it is a diuretic, and you know leads to potential changes in potassium levels, where you can have, and so you can have issues with cramping while training. And then even worse, the beta blockers, it's hard to get your heart rate up. It's harder to do cardio. You can't get your heart rate at the fat burning level, and you know, because they just want to keep you healthy, and that does keep you healthy. But I prefer products like lisinopril that allow you to stay healthy and actually help your bodybuilding progress.
For sure, for sure. Insulin, is there a place for it in contest prep? I know you said you know if you're not a pro, there's not a big reason to be using it in the off season. Is there a time to use it in contest prep?
Yeah, it's you know, the thing is, you know, insulin, people worry about contest prep, but insulin doesn't make you fat. Excess calories make you fat. I mean, thermodynamics, I always say this, as someone who has a degree in physics, it's very important for me for people to understand how important thermodynamics are. It's the most fundamental law in physics, and it's so important that if it's proven not to hold even one time, you know, it's what matters is with calories in and calories out. And if you could even just prove that one time, what you're doing is creating matter out of nothing, and that's a guaranteed Nobel Prize 100% of the time. And people don't realize just how exotic that is, creating energy out of nothing. If you take an atomic bomb like we dropped in Japan, you're looking at like 0.1% of its energy being being or 0.1% of its mass being converted to energy. A thermonuclear bomb, which no one's ever used, but we, you know, all the countries have, at very best, use about 10% of their mass as energy. And so you're talking like create, you know, with people worrying about using insulin on a diet and somehow getting fat, you're basically saying you're using more than 100% of mass as energy. I mean, it's just not possible. So people worry about insulin and preconscious and like that it might cause fat gain. It can't cause fat gain unless there's extra calories, or it can't cause weight gain, I should say.
Would the argument be that it would just be blocking off, like, you know, lipolysis at times when it should be taking place, so it's just not the right time for it? Like, is that sort of maybe the
argument? Well, yeah, it changes the way the body stores or burns energy, and that's what happens is when insulin binds to a cell, that cell can't burn fat for energy. And so you when I say energy, you know, the body stores energy or loses energy, but it does it in three forms. We store energy as fat, as carbohydrates, and as protein, muscle. And so that affects whether you're going to burn fat for energy or you're going to burn glycogen for energy or protein for energy. I don't think it's really, it's not the product people think it is, especially pre-contest. It's something that's nice to have. But when you're in a pre-contest and you're doing a carb up or a refeed day or something like that,
yeah.
If you're not already so depleted that your insulin sensitivity is so high that you're going to suck up all the carbs you eat, then you shouldn't be having the refeed day. If you need insulin to refeed or to store glycogen on a refeed day, you probably weren't as depleted as you should have been anyways to even have that high carb day.
So you don't think, like a pre-workout insulin, something to be run through a prep?
No. It depends on what your goal is. You're probably going to hold on to more muscle size, but you're also increasing the potential for not being quite as lean, especially if you're doing post-workout cardio. I mean, yeah. If you're taking a ton of carbs and using insulin during your workout, you're going to have less cells that are capable of burning fat when you do cardio after a workout. I have a lot of clients use insulin on their high days. You know, not all of them, but some of them do. It doesn't make a big difference in the end, but I think for the most part, people worry far, far, far too much about muscle size pre-contest when conditioning should be number one. I mean, you shouldn't worry about anything else until you're in condition. And because conditioning is what wins shows. Nobody ever wins a show because they're huge, especially at the amateur level. I mean, there's tons of fat super heavyweights. None of them are turning pro. The guy who turns pro is almost always the most conditioned guy.
Or like a light heavy or something like that.
And if you're the most conditioned guy and you happen to be the biggest, great, then you've just dominated. But until you're in proper condition, you're not going to have a chance at winning the show. It doesn't matter how much muscle you have.
For sure. Awesome. Do you have any, or any, you don't use it in the off season insulin or?
Yeah, no, that's when I prefer to use it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's more effective then. I mean, when your insulin sensitivity is decreased, but then you also run into the problem of decreased insulin sensitivity and low grade diabetes where your A1C and your resting glucose will get higher, which, you know, that ends up being a problem because then you're less effective at burning fat as opposed to other forms of energy when you go into a contest diet. So I think if you're going to use insulin, I think it's also important to use metformin.
Okay. And what sort of do you use it, like, you know, insulin during the day or pre-workout, then metformin at night to kind of reset, or how do you?
Well, what I actually do is I don't use insulin every workout. I use it a few times a week, multiple times a day with clients.
Okay.
So we might have two, maybe three high-carb days a week.
Yep.
On body parts generally, or large body parts. And we might use insulin three times on those days. But then the other 4 or 5 days a week, we would use metformin at like 500 or 1,000 milligrams.
Okay, cool.
Just in the morning after a meal.
Yeah, and that's been pretty effective for all of them?
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing that I talked to John Meadows about, and it was nice to hear that he has similar thoughts on year-round metformin use.
Now, with growth hormone and timing it with the insulin, some people say they have to be taken together. Then people like Milo say never take them together. What's your thoughts on when to inject which?
That's one of those things that I think is paralysis by analysis.
Okay. Yeah.
They work. Doesn't matter. People worry all those things. They think like somehow your growth hormone is magically not going to work if you take it at the wrong time or with insulin. If you're taking enough growth hormone, enough insulin, it's going to work. You're going to get big. I don't worry about any of that stuff.
Gotcha. Perfect. I mean,
obviously, insulin, you need to time it with food. But
oh, yeah.
I'd go ahead and put growth hormone and insulin in the same syringe if you want. I don't think it makes a difference.
Awesome. All right. Have you ever experienced or have any clients who simply respond better to certain esters of the same drug? All the other things considered, long ester test for short, or, any drug trend?
Not really. guys that are more prone to side effects will generally get the side effects more from the longer esters, but that's nothing to do with the compound's the same. I mean, the chemical is exactly the same once the ester is removed. The problem is with long esters, it just takes longer for the ester to be removed. So the levels of the compound build up in the bloodstream longer. So if you're really prone to the estrogen conversion to estrogen from something like testosterone, if you take a longer ester, what ends up happening is as the cycle goes on, your test levels get higher than they would with a short-acting ester, and that's what causes the increased side effects, the increased estrogen. But it's actually because there's more testosterone in your system because it's built up. But I mean, once the ester's cleaved, it's the same thing. I think people get way too worked up about the different esters.
Yeah. Do you use you stick with long esters throughout prep as well, just for ease?
Yeah. I mean, the only difference is if you use something like prop, you can, if you're going to cut your test off, you use something like prop, you can keep it in maybe 3 days longer, there's not a big difference.
For sure. Intra-workout nutrition then, either with, we sort of mentioned the insulin, but non-insulin use, is that something you're a big believer in? Have you implemented it? It was sort of something that wasn't really, a hot topic when you were first in the scene. You disappeared, you come back, and now, everyone's fucking.
Yeah, and actually, I was using it. I was using Waxy Maze when I was last on the scene. So, perfect. But yeah, and when you email me the questions, you use the word essential. And I want to say, is it essential? No, but that's a very well-defined word.
The reason I use that is because if you were to ask many people in today, you can't work out without it, It's kind of a little dig at how common it is.
The only thing I need, if you've ever heard of a guy named Ronnie Coleman, he didn't take intra-workout nutrition, and he pretty well, and he's a pretty big dude.
He was all right.
And yeah, so is it essential? No, it's certainly not essential. And that's another one of those paralysis by analysis things where people feel like, oh, I don't have my peri-workout nutrition, I might as well not even work out today, or there's no way I can grow. That's not the case at all. Is it beneficial? Yes, I believe it's beneficial.
What are your key ingredients here?
Essential amino acids and highly branched cyclodextrins. That's what I prefer to use.
Okay. You're a firm believer in the EAAs over the BCAAs? Or just don't give a shit, just use whatever?
Yeah, either one will work. I probably prefer essential amino acids. I mean, it depends what you're going for. The branched chain amino acids, specifically L-leucine, is the trigger for protein synthesis. But unless you have all the essential amino acids in the bloodstream, protein synthesis can occur. So if you take the branched chain amino acids, great, you trigger protein synthesis. But now if you've been too long without a meal and you don't have all the essential amino acids in the bloodstream, you can't grow, you can't create new muscle. So the branched chain amino acids are pointless. Conversely, if you have the essential amino acids, but you don't have L-leucine, even though it isn't essential, so it should be in there, then you have all the ingredients for protein synthesis, but you haven't triggered protein synthesis. That's why I like essential amino acids, because you should have the branched chain amino acids in there anyways, and especially L-leucine, but then you're going to have all the essential amino acids. So if protein synthesis is triggered, you can actually create the new muscle.
Awesome. Is there a specific sort of minimum? I mean, for someone who can afford whatever the fuck they want, what's the best amount to use?
Yeah, honestly, extra steak after the workout, probably. I just don't. That's what I mean. It's one of those things where people get way too worked up, and it's they analyze it so much that they actually prevent progress. It doesn't.
Just dump a few scoops in there and get on with your life.
Yeah, and probably really doesn't matter, because you're pretty damn lucky if whatever product you buy actually has the label claim of the amino acid anyway.
Yeah, most of them.
More and more, that's what we're finding out when people actually test these things, is that we're worrying about, measuring scoops with a knife to level it off to get the exact amount, and the label claim is nowhere even close to what.
Yeah, there's zero leucine in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're just pouring extra magnesium powder into a jug.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Fat burners, basically Clen versus ephedrine caffeine, what's your go-to and timing, when dose, sort of how do you approach fat burners when it comes to contest prep?
To try to keep them out as long as possible. Okay. The problem is with fat burners, I think I prefer ephedrine caffeine. I think almost everyone ends up using Clen and ephedrine caffeine in my contest. It's just very difficult to get into true contest condition. You need the help. But I think
both at the same time?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think it's a problem. And they're very different. Ephedrine, I mean, they're both beta agonists, but ephedrine is a much, much less beta 2 specific agonist, where Clen is pretty darn specific to beta 2 receptors, which is why it's such a good asthma drug, because the beta 2 receptors are in your lung. So they have different specificities and they have different effects on the body. I mean, Clen isn't really a stimulant in the way ephedrine is. Clen, you know, gives you the shakes and stuff, but it's not something that's going to make you wired. And
no, I can sleep after dosing Clen.
Yeah, exactly. Where ephedrine has the opposite. And so I like ephedrine because it gives you that energy boost that you don't get from Clen. The problem is that eventually you get kind of the adrenal burnout, you know, and I really hate that term, because there's no such thing as adrenal fatigue. It's not like a medically recognized syndrome outside of Cushing's disease, which is certainly not what you're getting when you take too much ephedrine, but you do, it ends up being, stops working. And so if you take it too early, if you start at 12 weeks out, yeah, great. When you're not doing much cardio and you have lots of energy and you have lots of fat stores left and you're eating a decent amount of calories, great. You have a ton of energy for your workouts and cardio. But then when you get to 4 weeks out and you're low on fat stores, low on carbohydrates, the ephedrine is no longer giving you an energy boost. And so you're doubly screwed. So I like to hold off as long as possible. I think the worst thing you can get is be 2 weeks out, need to still drop a few pounds of fat and have your ephedrine no longer giving you an energy boost. So I like to wait until six weeks out if you can. And then I usually start Clen and ephedrine at the same time. Clen at a really low dose and slowly build up. Ephedrine usually starts at twice a day right away.
Yeah, like the 25, whatever, twice a day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is caffeine something that you regularly sort of just use the whole time anyways, just to wake up at coffee and shit, or?
Yeah, unfortunately. I wish I didn't, but
I'm the same way, yeah.
Yeah, I start work at 7 a.m., so I got to get up at like 5:30 or 6 no matter what. And so I'm not functional. It doesn't matter how early I go to bed. My brain just doesn't work at that time. And so it'd be nice if you could devote your entire life to perfecting your onstage bodybuilding physique. But, you know, the rest of us have real things to do every day. And it's tough to do those without caffeine, especially once you get in the groove of using it.
Well, and like you said, if you actually had all day to sit around and think about it, you'd probably end up mind fucking yourself and being worse off anyways.
Exactly. Yep.
One thing we didn't quite touch on, you mentioned orals for pre-contest only. What are your go-tos and which ones do you avoid, like all the plague?
I don't really avoid any of them, I guess. Well, I think most effective are the easiest, almost always go-to is Winstrol, because it's not as faked. It's usually Winstrol when you buy it.
Yeah, that's not a very common answer. If you could just sort of describe what you like the most. It's kind of fallen out of favor. Like, for instance, I actually decided to try Winstrol like pretty recently, just because I'm like, fuck, no one around here ever takes it.
Yeah. Well, I just like it because you're usually going to get it. You know, I think Anavar is better.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's very easy to mix a combo of something like Winstrol and D-ball and call it Anavar and charge 10 times as much as you would for the D-ball.
Yeah.
And most people won't notice. But I think Anavar, Winstrol, and Proviron, actually, I really like.
Awesome. Yeah.
I think Proviron actually is something that's not utilized as much as it should. You know, it helps decrease estrogen. It increases, it's an androgen in itself, which helps you get a harder look. And it increases free testosterone, which is really what you want. I mean, testosterone's great, but if all the testosterone's bound, it's not really doing much. And so the provider really helps you keep a higher amount of free testosterone.
Is that something that could be kept in all year?
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's something that if you don't want babies, that's something you should be conscious of, because if you're taking it, there's going to be a much higher likelihood of babies with that free
testosterone. Oh, it's a baby maker.
Yeah, eventually the free testosterone gets so high that it should re-stimulate the lytic cells in the testes to produce sperm again.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so if people are hoping that they're on cycle and they're not going to produce anything, get off that provider. Yeah. Awesome. All right, man. I know you mentioned your website, so let's hear where your training services and also your website promote anything you have to promote and where, and also just one more time, remind people when you're competing to watch out for you.
All right. Yeah. My main website is troponinnutrition.com. And if you go there, that's where I do all my nutritional consultation through all my contest prep. And I work with people year round, off season, pre-contest, even people who have no desire to do a contest. And I'm actually running a discount right now. So if you go to the site, it says to contact me for a discount. And if you do that, if you email me, I'll tell you how to get the discounted rate. And then my new site is musclementor.net, which I think is a really good site. And it's all videos and articles. And I'm keeping my training log there for my contest prep. There's an anabolics course where I go into full detail with everything I believe cycle-wise year-round, all the way up from your first cycle to a pro-level cycle. And there's a ton of free content. My training logs are free, so you can see all my contest prep training logs and diet logs and what I'm doing for my contest prep. But there's also a paid section. It's only $9.99 a month, and it's all kinds of things the things I wish I would have heard when I was starting out, plus cycles, training, what guys are actually doing, real contest prep information that you normally have to pay, you know, maybe $1,000 or more to work with somebody. It's for $10 a month, you get a lot of that information just in the videos there. We're continuously adding new videos and stuff.
Awesome. I've checked a few of them out. You're actually doing a pretty high production value and everything like that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, we're proud of it.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much again for being the first guest. You were, like I said, you were the first guest, I believe, on Inside Bodybuilding about a year and a half ago. So we appreciate awesome. You doing it again and being open and honest with us. And hopefully we can have you back on soon, maybe after you grab that card.
Awesome. That'd be great.
All right, man. Well, best of luck in the contest, and thanks again.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it.